It's 3 o'clock, and we'd like to welcome everybody to our monthly school board meeting at the Sevier School District office. Today is Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. In attendance, we have Rick Orr, Dixie Rasmussen, Vice President Ryan Savage, Jack Hansen, and myself, John Foster. From the administration, we have Superintendent Dr. Kate Douglas, Assistant Superintendent Mike Willis, Business Administrator Chad Lloyd, and Executive Secretary Christian Nielsen. We'll begin with the preliminary, and we'll ask Chad Lloyd to take care of that for us.
Our Father in heaven, we thank for this day and all that was given us, and ask that we can have a good meeting this afternoon, that we will be directed by thy spirit in making decisions as and make the decisions that are in the best interest of our students and the community that our schools are housed in. Again, we're thankful for all that was given us, and we say this in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
All we pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, to begin with, we'll take a look at the consent agenda. Everybody's had a chance to look at that. It includes a couple of calendars. Is there any discussion or any comment about anything in the consent agenda from the board?
I've got one thing along the line. The first set of minutes that was revised, I didn't catch it before, but how's Rick Orr is being excused, but then it has him
listed
being seconded or something
at the bottom. Okay, I'll check it.
Anyway.
Okay, I'll check those. Thank you.
Any other discussion, questions? Then I would entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda as it's printed.
I'll make that motion, Mr. President.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. It doesn't appear that we have any public comment. Are we anticipating anybody coming? All right. Then we'll look down at items from the board.
I've got it up on the projector if you want to just look there, Joan.
I
USBA conference in Salt Lake City, January 9th through 11th. Krista, have you already collected from everybody who's going to that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have we?
We, as far as
talk to Jill about that.
Talk to Jill. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I'll need to get with you on is if your spouse is going or not. But other than that, yeah, we're good.
And we have the Christmas dinner social at Steve's Steakhouse on December 11th, and I think that's after a board meeting. And I think there's maybe a work session that day too. Is there any other items from the board we have at this time? If not, we'll turn to items from the administration. Superintendent Douglas, and take that voice, please.
My first item is just a reminder that October is Principal Appreciation Month. Hopefully you've already been hearing the ads on the radio. I've had a few people mention the updated ad, just celebrating and appreciating our principals. Chad, if you just want to scroll down and show them that this will be the article that we're running in the Salina Sun and the Richfield Reaper. It's a great picture, just a great group. We'll also get that on our website tomorrow morning. Right at the front and center, just reminding our students and our parents to thank their principals, to really recognize how fortunate we are. I've said it many times, but we really do have the best group of principals I think that's ever been assembled. I mean, they are talented and bright and positive. Just a great group of school leaders. And October is a great time to remember to thank them and show our appreciation for them. So be listening on the radio, on our website, on our social media, and in the newspapers. It's kind of a fun thing to celebrate them. My second item was a legislative update. I don't have a ton here. One thing I've learned is how quickly those 45 days go by. And really, it is a 45-day legislative session, but it's a year-round work. That there are constant discussions and bills being drafted, and there's a lot going on year round. So we're gearing up for the session to start in January, but we've been involved in a lot of meetings with legislative leadership. Just got word today there's four amendments to the Constitution that'll be coming out on the ballot. Amendment A and D were both struck down. They'll be on the ballot because the ballots have been printed, but they won't be valid. I just got word about an hour or two ago that Amendment A will not be valid. The Supreme Court of the Utah Supreme Court found that certain dates weren't met, posting requirements for Amendment D and Amendment A. So Amendment A is the one that would have moved the constitutional or the financial earmark away for income tax to fund public education. We had so much time to debate on it. It's interesting that now it won't even be voted on. And then Amendment D was kind of a last-second effort by the legislature to change how... I got the summaries. I had to just read them. It literally reads, should the Utah Constitution be changed to strengthen the initiative process by prohibiting foreign influence on ballot initiatives, clarifying the voters and legislative bodies' appeal to amended laws. State law would also be changed to allow all citizens 50% more time to gather signatures. It was kind of problematic from the beginning. There were a lot of people that were very much against Amendment D. So Amendment A and D are no longer ballot. I think they might both still show on the ballot. I'm not sure on D. I think it might get printed as well, but they will both be invalid. Amendment B is very important. We've talked about it quite a bit. The JLC supports Amendment B. It is on trust lands. It basically moves, allows the Constitution to be changed for trust land distribution from 4% to 5%. Remember, we've talked about this. That would mean about over $100,000 more for Sevier School District next year and beyond. The real principle of this is that trust land funds are supposed to be spent on the students that are currently in the schools. And what they found in several studies is the students of the future are being more blessed than the students of today because there's so much more money. That foundational nest egg that is trust lands, they have more money. They might as well distribute more to today's students, so it's more equitable for today's students. So, not allowed to tell people how to vote, but I would strongly encourage all of our citizens to really take a close look at Amendment B and what it does. I have yet to find anyone who's against Amendment B, including the State Tax Association. So, it does not do anything with taxes. It's just a super important fund for students and schools. We've been working really hard. There's a lot of bills that are stirring around on curriculum transparency for parents, really encouraging school districts to do a better job in communicating with parents and being open and transparent. I feel like we've always done well with that, but there's a few things on our website we're working on. Helping parents know better how to navigate when they have a question or a concern. You'll see a policy coming in the next month or two where it literally states in policy that any parent that desires to see any curriculum, teachers will show them all of that. It's something we naturally do. If a teacher refused to show what they were teaching to a student, they would be in trouble. But our policy will be very clear that any parent is allowed to see anything that teachers are teaching and fully, we can give them passwords to our online curriculum, we can fully open the books and show them exactly what is being taught. We've never had a problem with that. In fact, we do it quite often. So that this things we're working on making it more accessible for parents so they know exactly where to go to get information when they have questions, which is a good thing. And I think we'll continue to see legislation in that area this coming session. Something that also I think we'll start to see in legislation that I really support, it's called the first credential philosophy. And it really has a lot to do with the K-16 type discussion where we want students not only graduating with the high school diploma, we want them graduating with their first credential. We talk about that all the time. We want them graduating with either a certificate or part of a certificate. We want them graduating with a good, if they're choosing to go to four years or beyond in master's, that they have a strong foundation in the courses that will be that first credential. So I think that'll be a really good thing. That's something I've always believed in. I think it's also very motivating. Sometimes we lose students because they become unmotivated. They think, what's the purpose in all these classes? If we can hook them in a certificate or a credential of some sort, you think all of the CTE-type credentials or all of the bachelor's-type credentials, our district, we offer dozens and dozens and dozens of credentials. I would love to see that every single student that graduates from Sevier School District either has a credential in hand or a good portion of that credential. So that's good. That's good discussion that I'm hearing a lot about at the legislature and the governor's office. Teacher performance pay is, we've talked about at length in board meeting in the past, kind of has hit some speed bumps. You know, they've slowed down a little bit. They're seeing that they're going to have to hire an outside agency to help run that. It's sounding like, so there's a lot of discussions. The original interpretation of the legislation was that each district would have to opt in or out. And then if they opt in, they select their top teachers and then submit them to a large statewide pool. And the discussion is starting to lend itself more, which I'm liking, that if teachers are interested in this, any teacher in the state can apply directly to the state. We don't pit teacher against teacher within districts. I think there's some positive discussion. As much as I'm, you know, my core is against performance pay for teachers. It's just something that goes against what I believe in. But if they're going to do it, then I hope they do it in the fairest, best way they can that doesn't take away from collaboration and teachers working together. So it's interesting to see as that is running out. There was a great deal of money allocated to it. I think you all know that I strongly lobbied to have those funds used for safety instead of performance pay. They were one-time funds to the tune of about $150 million. And I would have much rather seen, and most superintendents, or all superintendents, would have rather seen those dollars go into safety. So we'll continue to keep you updated as performance pay rolls out. There's an interesting bill coming up that with food insecurities throughout the country. I think it in COVID, there were a lot of, they took away the need for families to pay for lunch during COVID. They used those COVID dollars for that. And then now that we're out of COVID, I think legislators and lawmakers are starting to see that there's need, that students are needing to be fed. And we obviously believe that as a school district, they're going to have a hard time learning if they're not fed. The bill that I've been hearing a little bit about would, we currently have free and reduced levels, so some of our families, depending on the national poverty line, they'll receive free meals, others will receive reduced meals, and what I'm hearing is talk about just having, if they hit the reduced line, then it's all fully paid for. I don't know how that'll all be paid for, because I was talking to Mr. Lloyd about this. This is a federal program, so I don't know how the state can legislate without funding it. It'll be interesting to see how that all rolls out. I already discussed those amendments. I think that's pretty much everything I was going to hit on with the legislative update. Any questions on anything I've said up to this point? Just keep rolling. Next item, kindergarten. And Chad has already pulled this up on the screen. This was something, just a gigantic celebration. We've worked really, really hard. I really feel like Sevier School District board members and Sevier School District was very instrumental in being able to get Utah to finally offer optional all-day kindergarten. And the proof's in the pudding. I mean, this data shows exactly what we knew it would show. As you read the headline, kindergarten is up. Students are achieving at higher levels in kindergarten, which will bless first grade, second grade, all the way through 12th grade. We know how important those foundational elementary skills are. We know how important it is. The research is so clear. If students aren't reading at grade level by third grade, it is an uphill battle from there on out. So we've just seen tremendous improvements in our kindergarten data throughout the state. If you take a close look at our district data, we already saw, we had about a 10% bump, but we saw it a couple of years before this because we had so many schools that were offering optional all day on our own. We were using our grants and some of our own funding, trying to pull the state our way, showing them data that it was working. So we already saw our big bump in our kindergarten achievement data before the state did. And it's kind of leveled off. I really think next year and the next we're going to see tremendous acceleration with kindergarten achievement. The first year was a little hard on our teachers that had never done all day. It's a whole different way of teaching. It's a new thing. But I'm just super excited to celebrate. It's something I wanted you all to certainly be aware of. It did exactly what we knew it would do by offering more instruction time, more one-on-one with the same teacher. The students perform significantly higher. In our district, I haven't checked lately, but the last time I checked, we had two students, I think, in the entire district that we were aware of that weren't taking advantage of optional all day. There are some families that are still choosing half day, and we totally accommodate and respect that. But that's just an exciting celebration. I'm almost done. I just have two more items. I always like to talk about the district vision, mission, and goals. I just think it's so important to always come back and hit on our vision, mission, and goals. The one I wanted to kind of just mention, we we've read chapter one in the book. You all have a copy of it. It is excellent. This just such a great opportunity for our principals and assistant principals and all of our district level administrators to really, really maximize each and every individual, all 700 employees. I showed the video last month where it showed the young mom that really learned that, and she's one of the authors, Liz Wiseman, but learned that important, so important strategy to just ask questions. Generally, people know the answers, and if we ask them, they engage and become. That's how our system is multiplied. That's why it's called the multiplier effect. But I love that. Just wanted to point out that one quote. It says, "Multipliers operate as liberators, producing a climate that is both comfortable and intense." I love that. I would want. That's how I would hope that our principals and teachers would describe my leadership: comfortable and intense. I just think that's so well stated. And that's obviously going to help us meet our vision to ensure that all students learn at high levels, just like the kindergartners, given sufficient time and appropriate instruction. So I wanted to point that out, and then I want to just show you a quick video. It's about a 5-minute video. It's on instructional strategies. We've noticed with working with our principals and our assistant principals, they've done a great job on teaching assessment and grading reform and how to improve how we measure learning. We've done a ton of work on student behaviors and what do you do when a kid flips their lid, and we suppress relationships. But one area we've kind of lacked in is, now we need to get back kind of a pyramid: behavior, measuring learning, and then just the learning itself, how we instruct student learning. So we're going to start putting some more focus back into teaching strategies and improving the instructional time. And that's what this little video is about. I think you'll really like it. It's one that comes from the Solution Tree group that we invest in heavily every summer. We take a pretty good group of teachers every year to the Solution Tree conference, and it comes from that conference. Just trying to gather real quick. There we go.
Once you've got these good questions, the question is how you use it. And of course, what researchers call IRE is what they see most of the time: initiation, response, evaluation. It's been called the standard classroom transaction model. That's what teachers, researchers see all the time. So I ask a question, students respond, I evaluate their response. I call it serial table tennis. Everything coming back through the teacher. So the teachers we've been working with do what they call basketball rather than table tennis. They ask one kid a question, they ask a second kid whether they think the answer is correct or incorrect, now I'm going to pick on a third kid for an explanation. So the locus goes round the room like basketball rather than always going back through the teacher. What's implicit in this is this idea of no hands up. This is kind of weird. I'm going to ask you to raise your hands if you don't allow students to raise their hands in classroom. Because who uses no hands up in their classroom? Who uses no hands up at least 80% of the time? Okay, thank you. That's got to change. I think that there's a very good case of making no hands up the standard operating procedure for every single classroom in K-12. Here's why. When you ask a class a question, and you're allowing kids to volunteer, you are creating two classrooms in the same classroom. In one of those classrooms, there are students dislocating their shoulders in their eagerness to show you they have a response. And in the same classroom, there are children trying to stay below the radar. They're trying to hide. So if you are allowing kids to choose whether to respond or not, you're making the achievement gap worse. This we call the Matthew effect, after the passage in, I think it's chapter 37 of Matthew, to those that have, more shall be given. and from those that have nothing, what little they have will be taken away. Because where those kids are engaged in everything you're doing, those kids aren't getting smarter. And the other kids in the same classroom are foregoing that opportunity to get smarter. So the achievement gap grows. So no hands up except to ask a question. So any kid can raise their hand to ask a question, but if you're asking a question, you should choose. Of course, you should do it at random. What we found is that teachers cannot do random. Because you know the pressure, don't you? You're always drawn to the kid who's going to give you a good answer just to wrap this thing up and move on. So you have to have some kind of technology to help you. You can actually get a randomizer using PowerPoint. Many interactive whiteboard software packages have one included. There's even an app for the iPhone with a randomizer. But I prefer popsicle sticks with kids' names on in a cup. It's much more flexible. For example, if a child is really irritating you, you can write their name on 10 additional sticks. One teacher's got, what she calls a can within a can, a special place for sticking a stick back so you can put it back again. I saw one kid's name come up four times in a 45-minute lesson, and he just thought he was having a really unlucky day. And people will use this with kindergarten, second, third, fourth grade. Not so sure about middle school. I've seen it work great in AP Calculus. Because if you pick on an AP Calculus kid at random, the first thing that's going to go through their mind is, why are you picking on me? Well, with the popsicle sticks, it's your unlucky day. Deal with it. Now, what's the answer to my question? It gets rid of all that kind of stuff. Everybody's engaged. Of course, the kids will resist. When you pick on a kid at random, they say, don't know. And what's crucial then is how you react to that. Because if you then say, okay, and ask a different kid, the kid is just one, aren't they? You said, I want everyone to think. The kid says, I don't want to think. You said, that's okay. So much smarter response is to say, okay, I'll come back to you. And get two or three different answers, and then come back to that kid and say, now, which of those answers do you like best? So that kid knows they need to be listening to other people's answers because there's a lifeline out there somewhere. Now, that works great if it's an opinion question or you can have different answers. But some kinds of questions that only has one answer. I'm going to pick on Tammy. Tammy, what's the valence of carbon? Okay? Anybody know? What's the valence of carbon? Four. Tanny? Tante? What's the valence of carbon? Thank you. Now, I haven't taught anything here. I have no faith that Tammy will remember what the valence of carbon is tomorrow. But I have established a very important principle that in this classroom there is no opt-out. That's what Dudlamoff calls no opt-out. The idea is that I'm going to give you whatever help you need to get over this fence, even if it's lifting you over it, but you are going to get over the fence. And that idea of no opt-out, you are going to give me an answer, even if it's just repeating an answer that somebody else has told you, creates a very important principle in the classroom, which is that there's no opt-out. So this, what Dudlamoff calls cold calling kids, you don't get a choice about whether you get called on or not, and no opt-out, I think that makes for much more engaged classrooms. And of course, you're hearing from kids you don't normally hear from, so you're getting far higher quality information. The other response you can use, if you're sure that the kid is just saying don't know because they can't be bothered to think, is yes, but if you did know, what would you say? And it's amazing how often the kid will actually say, okay, I realise I've got to get engaged, and occasionally he says an answer. Hot seat questioning is where I pick on somebody and ask them a second and a third and a fourth follow-up question to probe their thinking. Because most teachers' questioning is very shallow because they're scattered around the room. The danger with hot seat questioning is kids will be off task over there. Not if they know that my next move is going to be, right, summarise what Tammy just said. So there's other ways of keeping kids awake without sacrificing the quality of your dialogue.
I like to show you all that. That's the most important work we do. It's the work, the magic that happens in the classroom. And I like to share those little tidbits with you. We do obviously a lot more in depth with principals and instructional coaches, assistant principals, teachers, but we, in our principals meeting, we work on that work. It's the most important work. So anyways, that's all I had. I think we're good.
Thank you, Superintendent. Lieutenant. Mr. Willis.
You gonna grab this, Mike?
Yeah. Go, Mike. I'm start with the school report card. If you'll remember, a few years ago they switched gears. They quit issuing a letter grade for schools, which was good. We wanted that. But they do have a lot of information on the school report card. The great thing about the school report card is it's coming out much quicker than it had. It's a month earlier than it was last year. So they're getting better at a lot of things as far as the data gateway goes with releasing information. So I just want to touch on that for just a minute here. Just kind of give you an example of what I'm talking about when it comes to school report cards. So if you were to jump on the data gateway, and you don't have to have a login, but I will anyways because it gives me additional privileges. Throw that in my password in there. And drop down to the accountability section and school report card. So they did release it. Actually, they do a school district release that I can work with principals and kind of give them an idea of what to look at and be ready for. And then when the school report card gets issued to the public, there's no surprises in case we need to fix anything in the meantime. One thing that we talked about in principal's meeting the other day, something that we have not utilized on the school report card that we'd like to see more of, is it does allow some other indicators that a principal can jump on in that time frame, that grace period, before it gets released to the public, and add, if they want, some indicators of what's going on in the school. It doesn't necessarily have to be academic-based, but if there's something they're proud of or something that would kind of lend itself to other things that are going on in the school that they're doing that should be noted or recognized, then they have that ability to add two indicators that way. So with that said, if I jump on here, and again, that's something that we encourage them to do. Sometimes it's tough for, like Superintendent said, we have great principals. They don't always like to brag on themselves, and so it's okay every once in a while if they're doing really good things. We'd like to highlight that as well. So when I go into Sevier, I'll just grab South River Middle. It's always a good one to use for these types of things. So it gives, when you look at the performance piece here, it breaks it down, achievement, growth, and just several areas that kind of show what it, well, let me start over here. Let me go to profile first, because that gives you an idea of the demographics of the school, what grade levels it has, who the principal is, how many students, which I was shocked to see was only 262 noted here, because a few years ago when I was there, we were up to 320 at one point. So it's amazing how those numbers shift every once in a while. But you can kind of see by race and ethnicity, the percentage of students, not a huge surprise there. Has some trend data on student, how the student counts. You can see it's dropped slightly. It's kind of hard to tell. It's such a small graph, bar graph type chart. And then it breaks down. This one's always an important one. We're going to talk a little bit more about this towards the end here, but start talking about economically disadvantaged. So your students that are on free lunch, you've got in South Spring Middle School about 44%. That has dropped slightly over the past several years as well, the percentage of students that are receiving free lunch there. Students with disabilities, 13%, English language learners at 2%, and so forth. So it gives you an idea of the student population. Now go back to performance, and along with a variety of different charts and graphs and reports through the data gateway, the school report card just kind of gives you an idea. So on achievement, they were commendable. South Sphere Middle School does a great job, and so they should be commended for those types of things. Growth, they were also commendable, and that's usually you have one or the other. They're not usually both commendable. So not only did they have great achievement scores, but their growth was there too. So they're doing some good things, as is most of our schools. I just wanted to use this one as an example. But if I was to break down, you could see, maybe you can, pretty small, but you could see the percentages of students' proficiency in English language arts, mathematics, and science. If I want to dig deeper, I could go into a few details. You can see these little green arrows here that are going up. If they were red and pointing down, that means that we've gone in reverse. But as from last year and this year, obviously, this school did some really good things, and they moved in the right direction. If you want to dig deeper into, let's just use ELA, it breaks it down even further, shows you the school average, the district average, the state average, and a comparison there. I mean, they were well above the state average, which was great. Some of the things that we've talked about the last few board meetings. It gives you some trend data on language arts. Pretty much staying status quo. They're a high-achieving school, and they continue to do so. And then the breakdown, like I said, the demographics of the school and so forth, areas that they're doing well in. So overall, 55%, over 55% are meeting that goal. So lots of good things to look up and use. And so we encourage principals to, in their PLC meetings, to use this data. One, to look at what we're doing well and celebrate that, and then two, what can we do better? So Data Gateway is a great tool, and like I said, the thing that I'm impressed with is they just keep getting better at getting the information to us faster, and that is super helpful with what we're trying to do. Moving on to my item number two, school climate transformation.
One quick thing,
oh,
Nick.
Go ahead.
I just wanna, as while we're talking about that achievement data, it's something that you also be very proud of. This takes years to get to this point, but I think you all are fully aware that U.S. News and World Report found that Utah has the second best education, public education system in the country. So Utah is doing a tremendous job. And then in Sevier, we're 25 out of 31 areas were above the state average. So to be above the state average in a great state is saying something. And it's just our chart. It's a chart that we've shared with you. Last month I talked about it, the month before that I talked a little bit about it. But for example, in math, I mean, there's in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, we're all above the state average in every single attendance area, in every single grade. In ninth grade, two of our attendance areas are above it. In 10th grade, all three are above the average. In 11th grade, two out of the three attendance areas are above it. It's the strong, strong majority. We've never had data this solid. So it's something that we should really be proud of. And that's exactly what those reports are showing that Mike just shared with you. And where, like Mike said, in areas where we're not above the state average in proficiency, we're well above the state average in growth. So they should, as that growth continues, arrive above the state average. Those numbers still aren't good enough. So for example, our best attendance area in third grade math, 71% of our students are proficient. That's excellent. But that means 29% aren't proficient. We've got to continue to improve. Those numbers are really good. We have other numbers where only half of our students are proficient in math in certain grade levels in certain attendance areas. So it's something we've got to continue to strive for. But in my time as superintendent, I've never seen this many areas above the state average. So it's really exciting to see. And it's an absolute compliment and pat on the back to our teachers and our principals and their hard work, their diligent work.
Oh, excellent points, and very well said. The thing that I've noticed is it's almost the standard now in our district. The bar's just keeps getting set higher and higher, and it's almost what's expected, and the response is there too. So we're doing lots of great things, but it's almost like there is no going in reverse. We're continuing to get better, and like Superintendent said, that even that 71%, comparably speaking, is phenomenal, but then you start thinking, what does 71% mean? It means we've got work to do. So yeah, we'll just continue to keep moving in that direction, hopefully. Moving on to number two there, this is important because the School Climate Transformation Grant, obviously we keep talking about it, it's kind of coming to the end of the road there, but I'm so impressed with the people that are working in this area in our district. Shyla Anderson, I look at her help from Holly Peterson, who was a private contract that we worked with, and some of the things that they've developed. And if I just click on this link, I don't know if you had the chance, but it's this type of stuff, our MTSS handbook. If you just go through this, we're just so lucky to have all this information compiled at this point at the end of the term of the grant, and it just goes on and on. It just shows so many good things happening, and it's not been easy. This has been a difficult pull all along, but it's been so valuable to improve what we do this way, as far as our meetings, our mental health. You know, when they get together and they, you know, I'd be hard pressed to say any given school besides our mental health specialists have hired additional staff to help with this, and it's made such a huge difference. But you look at all the things. The other districts around us look at this as kind of the flagship, and it's just so impressive, everything that's happened in the last 5 to 6 years, counting the COVID year as well. So lots of great stuff happening there, and these aren't things that will end with the grant. These are things that will carry forward because of the grant, and so we're really lucky to have had that, and very lucky to have the people that have been put in those positions to do the work that they've done and continue improving what we're doing with mental health with our students in the district. Used to call it, this has only been going on for a couple of years now, but the Do Right Parent Night, I can't remember the exact term, but they've shifted. There is some legislation that has some requirements on what we do with those parent nights throughout the district, and now they're called parent seminars for student protection. And if you look up there, we do it once a year. It's got to be after 6 p.m. In each attendance area. And at one time, that's a tough sell to get parents to show up in the evenings for anything, let alone that. And we find the further we get away from a tragedy, which is the good point, we have less attendance at those things. But I know, so if you look at the dates there, they have to address substance abuse, bullying, mental health, internet safety, and suicide prevention. And you look on November 6th, Richfield area is coming up. The Salina area is November 19th. Monroe has already done theirs. But Monroe, for I don't know how they advertised, they brought pizza this time, and they had over 100 people that showed up to that parent night, which is just crazy to think, because generally we get 4 or 5, and we had over 100 people show up. And so they must have done a great job advertising or something along those lines. But to get that many parents to come and spend some time, it's because they care, and it's good community involvement that way. And we want to continue to foster that type of mentality that, hey, it takes a village to raise these kids, but we want all parents to know how much we love and care about them, and to see that kind of turnout, it was really impressive. So looking forward to the other two attendance areas nights. The mental health specialists and our counselors do a great job providing this information and intervention, if you will, for those types of things. Number three, assessment. I just want to touch on the fact that we just keep on plugging away. We've already finalized and finished all our beginning of year assessments for the year, and we'll be moving into the middle of year assessments here shortly. And it's just amazing how fast these years go by, but we're already there. So we've got our baseline in place, and Lots of good stuff happening there. Lots of good instruction. All our elementary teachers, for the most part, have completed the letters training, and that should improve what we're doing as well. So we'll just keep on getting better at what we do. As far as professional learning opportunities that I listed here, this is a new thing that the state came up with, and Superintendent, we've kind of got together and pushed it with our mentors, which is our assistant principals in each of the schools. It is a coaching, it's called Coaching Community of Practice, and it's a course, it's a new course set by the state, but we're highly encouraging all our assistant principals to be involved with that and to learn. And when I say mentors, that's their role, instructional coaches. In this setting, I don't like to use the word assistant principal. I like to use mentor or instructional coach because that's really their role. I mean, they do have a lot of administrative practice going on in each of their buildings, but really they should be in each of the classrooms working with teachers and subgroups and so forth to help push along and improve instruction so that we get better at all those things that I've already mentioned. So this course is new for this year. It's a Canvas course that they can do in, you know, it's broken up so it's not too overwhelming, but it should give them some help in training them to get better at that portion of their job and working with teachers and helping students learn. Number five, when I start talking about this, it's changed slightly, so I don't want to... it's the Utah's Intergenerational Poverty Report, and the reason I say it's changed slightly, it comes out, and you'll remember in the past when I've shared this with you, usually the first page or two had an infographic that had a lot of links on it that you could click on, talk about healthcare in our area, talk about education, kind of where we are with that. You got to dig deeper. The report's changed. It's got a lot of information listed, but it's not as easy to access as it was in the past, in my opinion. But if you break down, let's see, I'll go down here to poverty by location. The reason I bring this up is because I've sat up here for a few minutes and talked about all the great things we're doing and all the achievements and the goals that we're reaching, but we're doing it with a demographic of students that could otherwise be tough. We're talking about kids that don't always have a fair shake. Education isn't valued in the home in a lot of these situations. And so we're providing that. We're providing that, I know Superintendent calls it the great equalizer, public school, but in an area that is as high a poverty level as Sevier County is when it comes to intergenerational poverty, in other words, it's passed down from one generation to the next, it makes it difficult to sometimes... help those kids because they don't all start at the same point. We get a lot of kids that come to school, and it was interesting. I was in a meeting yesterday and talking to the elementary principals, and I asked all of them, I said, you know, a few years ago we were talking quite regularly about the fact that we have more and more students showing up that can't read, and we're starting from ground zero, whereas In a home where education is valued or it's been passed down that's the thing to do, kids have been read to and they've been helped that way, that's not always the case with some of our kids. They come ill-prepared and then it's catch-up. And that's a tough sell sometimes because some of them are just simply on survival. But if you look at, I think we do an absolute outstanding job with those kids at this point. And obviously the scores are showing that as well. But if you look at adult IGP, intergenerational poverty rates by county, you look, these are the top five, and you look, Sevier is right there in the top five. It's number five, but it's still, that's quite a, you know, it's something to note. It's something to be aware of, that we do have a lot of, we're trying to break that cycle. Matter of fact, in a lot of the grants, that, for instance, when I write the concurrent enrollment grant or the gifted and talented grant, those things they ask or they require that I do a grouping and show that we are offering the same courses and so forth, and we're trying to get all students to participate, not an elitist mentality but a whole group type mentality. And so when we talk about an underserved group, a lot of the times the the lower socioeconomic groups are that lower group in our district that we really have to be aware of, and we try and get those kids involved. We have so many offerings with our CTE center and our concurrent enrollment, our college courses and stuff. We want those kids to have those same opportunities that everybody does, and so we're constantly pushing that. See if I thought I had. Let me go right here. One thing that I found kind of interesting is you look at all the counties listed here. It says Utah children who are at risk of experiencing IGP as adults. In other words, it's just kind of passed down. We're not in the top five here. We're in the top nine. Why does it change from the earlier study to this one? And I think a lot of it is the hard work that our teachers are doing. He's right. It's a great equalizer. It's what we do to improve the lives of those around us. I'm sure we were in the other room where it had the poster up that says, you know, we're here to do, I don't know what it
is. Good things for other people.
That's why we're in the positions we're in. Because we look at those kids and we want to help them improve their lives and do better. And sometimes that means, like I said, they're not going to all start at the same point, but we have the ability to change lives. And that's what we're doing. And in a county our size with our attendance areas, we really do need to have that focal point in the education system. So it's a good read. It's just not as easily clickable as it was before, in my opinion, but still lots of good information there in that. My last item there is at the end of October.
Mr. Willis, yes. Can I just make a comment?
Please.
I just hope and recommend and encourage the board that if they ever have the opportunity to build a teen center at the three high schools, it's needed. I was reading an article the other day about theft in middle school students. It is the highest reason for theft is food or money for food. And I know that Cedar Ridge has started theirs, and they have already seen some results from that. And yet I hope that the state will recognize those that did not start with the first grant and those districts that were hesitant to come on board with that $150,000 or whatever that was, because you're not sure how it would maintain through those years. For us, if it comes forward again after I leave, I would hope that that teen center or something to that effect in North Sevier, Richfield, and South Sevier be instituted for those to have food, to have clothes, to have a place with internet, that they may study in the evenings, that they might shower. I truly believe that, or I think we have an idea that this isn't happening in our small towns. But I see the young mothers, I see these patients come in to me, and I am often needing to get with Sleep with Heavenly Peace to have the young children in that family have beds rather than sleeping on the floor or sleeping cold, utilizing the food bank, utilizing WIC, calling bishops for cribs and mattresses. And I think that we believe we're in good shape. And I think this report might exemplify that, no, there are those needs. And I would hope one day that those high schools might have teen centers.
Yeah, and we're just kind of scratching the surface with that. Matter of fact, the people that are over in the state, I told you last time that the Cedar Ridge kids call them the rich white ladies. They're coming down, I think, next week as a tour, because they've made quite a bit of progress at Cedar Ridge on that. And the one thing is, at this point right now, it's something that I've talked to Mark about quite a bit, is kind of an outreach with those outlying places right now is to provide, you know, they've got the pantry, they do have those smaller versions in a way at some of the outer high schools that they can provide help that way too until we get to that point. But
I talked to the director, and she did not know how that would work.
Yeah.
They're done at 3:00 in the afternoon. They seem to only have enough to take care of their students at this point. And so I was hoping for that, because I had been told that they were going to try and reach out. But of course, travel from North Sevier and South Sevier, is a problem for students at that point, and especially when it is closed down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that more than likely they're not going to be able to reach out to those schools. And so I think that was a hope in the at first that that could happen, but when I had spoke to a director about it, she did not feel how that would be accomplished. So that's something to continue with the discussion and the collaboration.
Right.
I would encourage.
Good point. Any other questions? That last thing was on Red Ribbon Week. End of October is our Red Ribbon Week, and the theme this year is Life as a Movie, Film Drug-Free. So we encourage all of our schools to do their, you know, they all participate in Red Ribbon Week and make that a priority to discuss some of those things that are going on with that. So that's all I have. There's no questions for me.
You know, I'd just like to mention to the administration, you know, some things that been going through in my mind as we go through, you know, these trainings and whatnot that you provide our teachers. And every time I see something like this video here, I go, I wish I'd have thought of that. You know, almost every single time we sit down one of these things, I think, I wish I'd have had that training. And yet, you know, I think you're walking a tightrope between training and maybe overtraining, but I don't think we do. I think you guys do as good a job of, you know, training our teachers or having them train as, you know, anybody in the country. I'm always proud to say that I'm from Sevier School District, because we are good. And we're good because of our administration. We're good because we have teachers who want to be here. They don't complain. I guarantee you, you go somewhere in the state, anywhere in the state, and you find a group of people, you walk into an elementary school anywhere, and you talk about their training, and the first thing they'll do is, yeah, it steals from our time. Well, we got to make sure we're not stealing from the time, but we're adding to the time, solid, you know, well-founded instruction techniques that actually work. And you guys do that. And I want to thank you for that.
We, and just to add to that, I know it's one thing that we talk about quite regularly, but to provide not only adequate, but the right kind of training at the right time, I agree with you, but we also incentivize that in a way. So it's not, I mean, in some of our cases, we have our curriculum council members set up trainings, you know, several times a year, and they bring people there. We pay them for their time, but it's after hours, not on contract time, and so they're getting what they come here for. There's, you know, and like we talk about in the summertime, we try and provide training that way. You know, we sometimes push back when a specific subgroup or a individual teacher wants to go to a training. We try and make it so that they're not out of their classroom first, and second, that it's worthwhile. And then we promote the heck out of it at that point to try and benefit not them per se in a way, but more so to benefit the students. It's got to be something relevant that way. So yeah, thank you for saying that, and I agree 100%. It's something that we talk about on a regular basis, and I know superintendent's always looking for opportunities that will improve what we're doing without overloading and bogging the system as well. So, good point.
Thank you, Mr. Rules.
Just one quick comment, President Foster. I just wanted to thank Mike. I love how you connected the dots with intergenerational poverty adults and intergenerational poverty children, and I agree 100%. It's not where we want it yet, but it sure is. We're closing the gap. And I do believe strongly that it is because of the teachers and connections and relationships. Public Ed is the great equalizer. It is the handout, hand up for every single child. And that's why you see me get frustrated and somewhat emotional when, in the name of parent choice or in the name of whatever XYZ program, I say it so every day, I'm like a broken record. We're better together. We need our entire community participating with us in our system to lift everyone. I firmly believe that our system is the best for students that are not dealt a fair hand, and it's the best for students that are dealt four kings or a full house or whatever you want to call it. It's a great system, but we need everyone to participate. I just love how you connected those dots. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Floyd. Oh, just before you start, South Sevier just won the state golf.
Wow!
Did the Sorensen kid win first take?
First time in? That's awesome.
Did the Sorensen boy win at all?
He is in a playoff right now for medals.
Wow, that's awesome.
He was going. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Where did he play? Pardon? Do you know where they played?
Were they in Heber?
Where were they?
They played in Cedarship.
Cedar.
Good for them.
Prairie Dogs. I'll be quick. Number one item is just that Monroe City wanted an updated interlocal agreement for our recreation use. That kind of came about with the discussion of the tennis court thing that we're working on. So they were able to sign that updated agreement in September at their town council. So I have it ready for President Foster to sign. We do that after. I think we'd list it as an action item, but really let's just have you sign the agreement. Nothing's changed on the agreement. I just updated the dates to reflect it being for the next 5 years. South Sevier High School, probably not much to report on since our last board meeting. Just things are moving along. It appears that we're on schedule to have the shop done by January. The two classrooms that we had remodeled are being used. One of them took a little bit longer to wrap up. Hopefully it's done, but Mr. Kidder's been using his classroom since first day of school, so things have been moving along there well. Hopefully they keep progressing, and we're able to get into that shop by January, and then you'll see the wrestling room completed after that in March. I just wanted to mention we just had our financial audit. I'll report on that in December, as I always do. But everything went well there. There was nothing that, no findings or anything like that, as far as I know right now. So just a big thanks to everybody in the business department and the program directors that keep all their funds being spent the way they're supposed to be. So. I just wanted to touch on the October 1 student count. Let me pull these numbers up here. Hopefully everybody can see them. There's just each school, and you can see the difference from 2023 to 24. We're down 70 kids from last year to this October, which is quite a bit. Normally we fluctuate a little bit. The last time we've probably been down that much was COVID year. We had a down year, and then when the charter school opened up, we had a down year. So this is quite a bit down. It's not like we didn't see it coming. Some of this is based on birth rate. As you can see, like at Ashman Elementary, we only have 146 kindergartners. Normally, that's 165, even 170 isn't out of the norm for Ashman. 146 is one of the smallest kindergarten classes in the last 25 years. 75 at Monroe, that's extremely small. Normally they're 100. I mean, you can pretty much just count on 100 kids at Monroe every year. Again, these are things we staffed for. We know that the birth rate is down for our kindergarten classes coming in. So that's part of why we're down 70 students. You can see some of the areas are up a little bit. Like Mike had mentioned that South Sevier Middle School was down a little bit on that count he was looking at, but
now they're actually up because they had a big class come back into the school. So some of that's just population, you know, ebbs and flows, but some of it is, I think, a long-term trend. I think over the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see our population continue to decrease because of these low birth rates. So for whatever reason, normally we have about 330 births on a given year, and the next 4 or 5 years, we only had about, on average, about 270 births. So there's, you know, 60 kids difference that you're going to see unless we get some in-migration, which historically just hasn't happened.
I was in a meeting this last week in Utah Valley Hospital, and the year of 2023 was down 1,000 births. Now, they did have an insurance shift between Timpanogos and the Lehigh, kind of the new hospital there on the Lehigh Bench, but they were very shocked. They've had to, you know, their labor and delivery unit has actually gone from 14 rooms down to 8 rooms. They've had to take away about a third of their staff. Mm. And to me, Utah County somewhat is an earmark for the state of Utah because it's always been the baby boom place. And so the birth rate is down.
Yeah.
Across the state, and I think also across the nation.
Yeah, I would assume it's like that everywhere. Luckily for us, you know, I'm able to key in on pretty much one hospital, and I get the stats from the state, so they're taking any birth from Sevier County. I'm not sure if they're looking at residents of Sevier County or births in Sevier County, but it's the same data that's been used. I've used for since I've been here, and then I chart back 20 plus years using that same data. So, like I said, I think over the next few years, the elementaries better be prepared right now to start accounting for these less smaller class sizes, and then eventually those class sizes will transition to the middle school, and we'll see some decline there, and then into the high school. But like I said, unless there's some in-migration or something like that kind of offsets it, but historically that hasn't happened.
Chad, as an administration, have you thought about how to encourage, advertise
a higher birth rate
at home school? Like, it was to me about 4 or 5 years ago kind of the cool thing to do when you were a young mom. And of course, now with the voucher program and different things, but I'm somewhat seeing some mothers tiring of what they thought was going to be this cool thing to do. And I don't know how, and I do believe it's the best show in town. And have we ever thought about how to incentivize, I don't know, somewhere make help with individual type, I don't know about advertising, but to help bring those students back into the fold, you might say.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's probably a better question for Mike or superintendent. But, yeah, I would think having the best game in town is going to...
I would think that would work.
I mean, people are going to realize the good things we're doing, I guess is what I'm saying.
I spend hours and hours and hours with these families trying to point out what we can offer and constantly repeating that, well, what is it that you need? and it is a variable because we have about 250, I think, at this point that are participating in online schools and calling them homeschool. What they're finding is literally going to outside of our county. The charter school is about 70, I believe, of the 250 range.
I see them advertised.
Yeah.
All the time. And I'm just, how do we battle?
So what we've done is we advertise more than we ever have in the history of Sevier School District with radio, with social media. It's just really, really difficult to... You're right. I liked your comment that it's a badge of honor, or for one reason or another. But we really need, we just have to continue to help everyone understand that. And it's what I talk about all the time on the radio, in these meetings, everywhere I go. Our society, our community is so much better when we all participate together. By separating students, at some point, those children will be delivered to a society that exists currently in our schools. If everyone participates, we lift all ships. But it's a difficult process because the parent is the most important and entitled person to take care of their own children. It's just, and it's, I have those conversations hours and hours with my own neighborhood, my own religious congregation, and I'm constantly encouraging, and I do get frustrated with the advertising, and there is a big confusion out there that this family is homeschooling, when in reality they're not. Their entire weighted pupil unit is going somewhere else.
Tennessee.
And then they come and say, hey, I want this. I want to keep doing anything I'm doing, but I want my child to participate in Sevier School District with this. And you've heard me talk about this. And I said, no, we've drawn that line. We need you. We have to draw a line somewhere. Pretty soon, the students who rely on us will no longer have options either. But it's a very difficult conversation. And we've spent mostly, I mean, I do more with newspaper and radio than, well, there wasn't ever anything done. And we're constantly trying to advertise the choice. And that's one thing we're doing better at statewide is in our system, we offer more choice than is imaginable. We offer more choice than any right in our own system. There's tons of choice.
I just don't think some
in the name
of those
of choice they leave. Right.
I don't know that those mothers are listening to the radio and reading the paper.
Yeah,
I think
the
social media, and I've noticed many of those entities out there being very strong on social media, and I would love to see more of a larger type voice than you from the district to show the best in town and the best, and to bring some of those back into. I think the parents, like I said, some of those that started now are getting tired, and some of them are bringing them back into middle school because now they're realizing I can handle teaching the elementary, but once they get into middle school and high school, they're realizing that they're not the match, depending on how they're doing that at home, quote at home type education. So
those online and charters, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you their intent is?
Money.
Yeah. I'm grateful you brought it up. It's an issue we've been grappling with. I've been losing sleep over for a dozen years now.
One thing we talked about, Superintendent, myself, yeah, it's nice if you have that shotgun approach, just so the word's out there, but that individualized, and we try and train our principals to have that personal approach and make those phone calls on an individual basis and try and work with parents so that they realize that, hey, we're lending a hand, bring you back in if we can. We want your student, you know, we care about them. We want to put our arm around them and thing. But it's the talent that some of our principals have, and some of them maybe are developing that to have the ability to talk to people that way and help them realize how important it is and how much we really do care. So it's an ongoing process. It's work.
Chad, I have a question for you. When we put this enrollment data up on the screen, does that include preschool, or is preschool separate?
This is just
stepsister
regular
K, or what?
Yeah, this is just regular K-12 students. So this doesn't include our dorm. It doesn't include other populations that get a separate WPU. This is just our normal WPU-funded K-12 students. So if you were to add in our dormitory and self-contained population and preschool, we're probably 4,800 or 40, 4,700, something like that.
Preschool doesn't come under the umbrella of WPU?
No. No, just kinder K-12.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. I believe we have a closed meeting to discuss negotiations, personnel, and security. I'd entertain a motion to move out of our regular session and into closed meeting, and that'll be my individual voice vote. We have a motion to go out of this meeting.
I make that motion.
Moved and seconded. What do you say, Rick Orr?
Yes.
Dixie Rasmussen?
Yes.
Brian Savage?
Yes.
Jack Hansen?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. The motion carries. This meeting is closed. Go to the closed meeting.